Faith Kelly is going to read the scripture of Ruth, chapter 1, verses 1 to 18.
In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. And a certain man of Bethlehem in Judah went to live in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They went into the country of Moab and remained there. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. These took Moabite wives. The name of one was Orpah, and the name of the other was Ruth. When they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion died. So the woman was left without her two sons and with her husband. Then she started to return with her daughters-in-law from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had considered his people and given them food. So she set out from the place where she had been living, she and her two daughters-in-law, and they went on their way to go back to the land of Judah. But Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find security, each of you in the house of your husband." Then she kissed them and they wept aloud. They said to her, "No, we will return with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Do I still have sons in my womb that you may be that may become your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. Even if I thought there was hope for me, even if I should have a husband tonight and bear sons, would you then wait until they were grown? Would you then refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, it has been far more bitter for me than for you, because the hand of the Lord has turned against me." Then they wept aloud again. Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. So she said, "See, your sister-in-law has come back to her, has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." But Ruth said, "Do not press me to leave you or to turn back from following you. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. There I will be buried. May the Lord do thus and so to me and more as well, if even death parts me from you." When Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more to her. There is something about this time of year that turns my thoughts to death, or rather to the dead. The autumn transformation of the natural world and the cluster of holidays centered on remembering those who have passed means that feelings of loss and grief are often churned to the surface again. I find myself spending some of my quiet time considering those saints who have gone before. One such saint for me is my paternal grandmother, Donna Kelly. Her long faithfulness is hard to explain concisely, but I'll try. As my dad said at her funeral, she was a person who fed the sparrows instead of the flashy birds. She cared for those animals and those people who no one else valued. Her work made Battle Creek Friends Church, where she was a member her entire life, a place that welcomed and supported a cast of oddballs and seekers. Her trust in God was persistent, but hard-earned. When my grandfather was fading into the oblivion of Alzheimer's, she wrote to my sister, "Life is different now, but God is still faithful." In our scripture reading today, we hear another story of women swimming in a sea of grief and loss: Ruth, Orpah, and Naomi. The book of Ruth is a story of personal misfortune set in a time of community misfortune. In the days when judges ruled, the book begins. This was a period of Israel's history full of turmoil and trouble. In the book of Judges, which immediately precedes Ruth, we are told over and over again that everyone did what was right in their own eyes. This selfishness and moral confusion resulted in war and civil strife. A drought comes, and the combination of human and natural failings creates a severe famine in the land. Naomi, her husband, and their sons must flee to another land, Moab, in order to survive. Despite their hopes, disaster follows them there. Naomi's husband dies. In the midst of this loss, the remaining family begins to put down roots. Naomi's sons marry local women, non-Israelites, Ruth and Orpah. Life seems to be turning in a better direction for a while, but then suddenly, both sons die, with no children to survive them. Naomi is left a widow with no sons or grandsons, a precarious and impoverished position in her time and place. She's now a refugee in a strange land whose home is unsafe to return to, with no way to support herself. Ruth and Orpah are young widows with no prospects, no clear future. But Naomi gets word that the Lord has considered his people and given them food in Judah. And so Naomi makes plans for her and her daughters-in-law to return to her homeland, in the hope that life will be easier and better there. It is here that we are first introduced to one of the main themes of the book of Ruth: the control and care of God. Life is different now, but God is still faithful. Through the story of Naomi and Ruth, we receive a picture of God's providence and protection, God working through the ordinary parts of people's lives to bring about his plan of salvation. But like all good tales, the book of Ruth does not argue or analyze its points, but rather illustrates them for us in the lives of our main characters. We see the truth about God's work in the world through the narrative. This is a theological work, but it is not a treatise. Because of this and the complexity of the topic, we are left as readers with a lot of questions. Or at least I, as a reader, am left with a lot of questions. What was God doing in the decade of famine? Why did he just start to consider his people now? Couldn't this all be avoided? Where was he when Naomi's family members fell like flies around her? Like life itself, this story begs the question of suffering and God's ability to act in the world. We look for quick answers, but we sometimes have to look below the surface to begin to piece them together. Naomi, too, is searching for answers. As our story continues, we see her being tossed about by the grief and uncertainty enveloping her. After she, Ruth, and Orpah set out for Bethlehem, Naomi unselfishly changes her mind about the young women accompanying her. She tells the other two to return to their families of birth. She blesses them, asking that God would care for them as they have cared for others. At this, all three of them are overtaken by their grief and loss for the death and for the final parting they are about to experience. They weep together on the side of the road. At first, the two young women refuse to leave Naomi, but she rebuffs them, reminding them that she has nothing to offer them. There is no more sons that might marry them and care for them. She tells them, "It has been far more bitter for me than for you, because the hand of the Lord has turned against me." Reading commentaries and reflections on this passage, I found that people like to project a lot of things onto Naomi and onto the other women in this moment. Whatever point you're trying to make or whatever you're dealing with, it's easy to read into Naomi and Ruth's motivations here. It's easy to make them tools and making a larger point that's not supported by the text. But with this caution in mind, I think it's clear here that Naomi is bitter and broken. She blames God for having abandoned her, or even worse, having caused this pain and misery. This is not an unfounded conclusion, as later in the book, Naomi changes her name to Mara, which means bitter. She is understandably not in a good place. And many theologies preach today, this would be the end of the story. We are told that as faithful followers of an all-powerful God, we are not supposed to be angry, bitter, or upset about the hand we are dealt. If we are somehow failing. And while I would not encourage us to live in that dark emotional space long-term, it is good to remember that Naomi is honest about her feelings of grief and betrayal. And yet the story continues. God does not abandon her. He does not write her out of his plan for salvation of the world because she's mad at him. Like the psalmist, like Job, like Jacob, like the Syrophoenician woman of the New Testament, Naomi joins a long list of us who wrestle with God because of the chaos and uncertainty of our lives. After more heartfelt weeping, Orpah leaves Naomi, but Ruth begs her to let her continue as her companion. She speaks some of the most poetic and moving lines in the book, and possibly the whole of Scripture. Ruth says, "Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die." It is no wonder that this passage is sometimes read at marriage ceremonies. It speaks of a deep courage and commitment that we rarely see between two people outside of our marriage vows. At this point, Naomi gives up and gives in. Because of her persistence, Ruth can come with her. The story goes on for another 3.5 chapters, and I don't want to give away too many spoilers here. But I'll say that the courage, loyalty, and commitment of Ruth shows that Ruth shows to Naomi continues to bear fruit throughout the rest of the book. Ruth continues to be a source of hope, comfort, and support for Naomi. Naomi guides and leads Ruth as she makes her home in a new land. Ruth and Naomi are cared for in the midst of their poverty and vulnerability, culminating in the loyalty and generosity shown by Boaz in his marriage to Ruth. In the very last chapter of the book, we are presented with a genealogy, which informs us that Ruth, this Moabite woman, an outsider, was a close ancestor of King David. She also becomes one of only four women mentioned in Jesus's genealogy in Matthew. Ruth is one of only two books named after women in the entire Bible. What was it that Ruth did that was so special, that earned her all this praise and a place as a link in the chain that leads to David and to Jesus? Why was this story important enough to tell over and over again and to finally write it down? I think it's easy as modern readers to lose the magnitude of what Ruth did. In our current cultural context, moving around, changing religions, and living in a small family unit are all pretty common. But Ruth here is choosing to go alone with her mother-in-law to a different land, to follow a different God, to fend for herself in an economic system that was sure to result in her impoverishment. She displays an amazing amount of loyalty, love, and courage in giving up safety for uncertainty and exile. She's obviously foolhardy and illogical in her choosing to follow Naomi. But it is through her personal, brave choices that we see most of God's work in this story. It is in her devotedness and care for her mother-in-law that we see a glimpse of God's character. Ruth indeed is an odd choice for a heroine. She's not an Israelite. She is a dangerous and often maligned foreign wife. She's a convert to the faith. She's not wealthy or powerful or particularly beautiful. She has no armies or household servants to command. She actually has no position in society. But she is called a woman of valor. In her character and actions, she challenges the reader's assumptions about who can do God's work and who God will use to fulfill his will. Ruth and her story stand against nationalism and the limiting of God by human boundaries that we are all so often tempted to. It is in the surprise of Ruth, the woman of valor, the foreigner, that we begin to get some of our answers to the questions of where God is in the midst of grief and suffering. The people in the book of Ruth are the instruments of God's work. Naomi is shown God's loyalty and devotion by Ruth. It is Ruth and later in Boaz that we see a God who stays with us, who promises to provide, even when we can't see how, and even when it's not on our timetable. We see a God who works in the lives of even the most ordinary people, even the most unexpected and unlikely people. As one commentator put it, in the book of Ruth, we witness to the activity of God in human affairs, even to the overruling providence of God in seemingly unimportant people in their unimportant affairs. Put another way, in Ruth, we see that life is different now, but God is still faithful. This has been a summer of grief for me. And I think for many of us in different ways. There was our miscarriage. John Mauer died. While we might feel some hope about the pandemic, it continues to take lives and impact our community. Like Naomi, I have to be honest about my frequent bitterness and disappointment. Too often, I am weeping on the side of the road, even as I try to move into a better future. Maybe you're there with me too. Maybe you can readily list your griefs and losses. If that is the case, then I would encourage us to look around for Ruths, for those in our lives who might come along beside us and promise us to come with us into the uncertainty of what is to come. To look for God's presence and provision in the love and loyalty of the people around us. That is hard. But let me ask something even harder. I would encourage us to be Ruths for each other. To, in our own grief and loss, look for how we might care for those who we love and value. How might we be instruments of God's love in their lives? I deeply believe that the only way we will get through the turmoil and uncertainty is by promising to be present for one another, to through devotion and love come together to a place of homecoming and new blessings. How can we be like Ruth? And so I pray that when we are desperately looking around for God's presence and love, we will find it in each other. When we are living in the difficult country of grief and disappointment, that we will cling to each other, and in that way we might be Christ to each other. May we be able to say together, life is different now, but God is still faithful.